So, Tom Parry, we're sitting on a new table right now.
We are.
You are turning up the heat quite literally.
I'm actually turning it down. I'm a little bit warm.
Okay, fair enough. But the odd thing is that if I sit in my usual stance, I'm looking across at myself and some Viking drink that is on your windowsill because we are at your place and not my place.
It's unusual, isn't it? We're at a tiny little table in the corner of my kitchen.
But despite it being a new table, still the same podcast. It's called Top Matt Attack.
That's right.
How are we doing?
Oh, I'm doing very well, thank you. Yes, welcome to my humble abode. How do you find it?
It's pretty good. Your Ringtons tea.
Yes, yeah, but naturally, that Ringtons? Yeah, it is Ringtons.
It is Ringtons. Yeah. I can taste the Ringtons.
Yeah, are you okay with Ringtons? A little bit different than...
I don't know, it's got an interesting taste.
It's stronger.
I don't think it's stronger. It hits a different note to the tea connoisseur.
I'm rather partial to it now. It takes a bit getting used to. But
yeah, well, you know, fortunately, you've dosed me with it long enough that I think I'm perfectly fine with the Ringtons.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, apart from that, you know, can't complain. Sturdy table that I'm sure won't deafen people's eardrums. I'm sorry. How are you doing? How's your week in gaming been?
My week in gaming has been reasonably normal. Nothing too far out.
No.
I picked a couple of games that I've been playing a little bit, which we can talk about later. And I've also gone back to a few old favourites.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Some old favourites.
Some
hidden gems, question mark?
Well, maybe. King of Fighters 2000 I downloaded the other week.
All right, okay. How was that? Yeah.
Well, it's still good.
It's a pretty bloody good game.
It's available on PS4 now. It's the PS2 version of the game.
Oh, okay.
I remember when that originally came out on PS2, it was bundled with 2001, I think.
Yes.
You don't get such a nice deal this time, but it was on offer for about £3.
So well, I mean, £3, you can't really
sniff it,
can
Fighters you? On the PS4, I couldn't resist, you know what I'm like.
Well, I know you, Tom Parry.
Yeah, I've got 96 and 94 on the PS3, and now 2000 on the PS4, along with the new one.
Yeah.
Which I can never remember. I think it's 12.
I think it's 12. I don't know. You would know better than you do. Yeah. I just know it's a King of Fighters game.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I mean, I played a little bit of that in the week, and it holds up rather well. I've also been playing that one I mentioned the other week, Aquapaza, or Aquapaza.
Aquapaza. We're going to be
posh about it.
On the PlayStation 3, lad.
Yep. No, yes.
Yes.
Yes, American import. Great fighting game. And I'm pretty certain it's developed by the same people who made one of my other favourites. What's it called again? That really long name on the PS4. Nitro Plus Blasters.
Yes.
Heroine's Infinite Duel.
So you remember the entire thing. I just remember Nitro Plus Blasters.
I've said it enough times. It's a great game, actually. It's better in some respects. The backgrounds are a lot nicer.
Yeah.
There's actually stuff going on in the backgrounds.
Okay, well, that was our main complaint with Nitro Plus, right? Is that it's pretty static.
Yeah, and the gameplay is very similar. I was enjoying playing as a character today who's carrying books all the time. All the moves are done while she's carrying books.
Okay.
So she throws them books, or she can make a bookcase appear from nowhere and fall on the opponent. But she's always carrying the books.
Okay. That's interesting.
That's the thing. And it's quite a good character, actually. So
is this based on visual novels?
Visual novels, again. Okay. It's that ex-AMU, which was the same features in
Nitro Plus.
Nitro Plus as well.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, it's good fun. I'd recommend it to anybody who likes fighting games. It's very close to Nitro Plus Blasters in its quality.
And, I mean, Nitro Plus Blasters is a damned good game if you can't get hold of that. So
indeed, yeah. This one was only available in Japan and the US. It is available as a digital download to those European PlayStation owners.
Yeah.
So you can download it, and I would recommend
it. It's also on the PS4 now, right, as well?
Aquapaza, I don't know if it is.
I'm 99% sure you can get a Japanese PS4 copy.
Okay. Well, I know the other one is. I picked up this one recently as well. Climax, Fighting Climax, yes, is available on PS4 as well as PS3. I picked the PS3 copy. It's on its way over to me in Denmark, so I will give you a lowdown on that when I get it.
Okay.
And what have you been playing, Matthew? I mean, I've got other things, but I'm very eager to hear about your thoughts.
A certain Falling of Titans. Titanfall the second time around.
Two,
yeah.
Well, yes.
I've been playing a bit of Titanfall 2. And I must say, I really enjoy it. Right, where do we start with this?
Well, it's a good start. You really enjoy it.
Long-time listeners of the podcast will know that I was quite a big fan of Titanfall the first time around on the Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a beautifully, beautifully made first-person shooter. I thought it brought a lot of depth to the combat in its wall running and the grappling hook and all of these other things you could do in it that were actually then mimicked like a year or so later, not as well, in my opinion, by Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. However, Titanfall 2 returns. The gameplay on the multiplayer end is still incredibly tight. Obviously, a lot more going on now in terms of in-game progression of your multiplayer character, a lot more weapons, a lot more Titans, which was my biggest peeve with the first one, is that I'd played it for about 10 hours and I felt like I did everything. And that's why I think the user base dropped off. In this game, they've corrected that a hell of a lot. There are a lot of level components to everything you do. Your weapons all have their own individual level. Mm-hmm. So by constantly using the same weapon again, you will get better sights and more
that's
ammo
a brand new
and
thing.
Things for the guns. Yeah, this wasn't present in the last Titanfall. It was literally
keep you playing.
It was kind of like Call of Duty. It was like, hey, you get to level 25 and you unlock weapons as you go. You can even prestige in Titanfall, which doesn't actually take away any of your abilities, I think, but gives you new skins for your guns. I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite there yet. Okay. But yeah, so on top of your guns, you have a level for your pilot, which means you can do new aesthetic detailing to your pilot and obviously get loadout changes so you can sprint as well as do a grappling hook or throw smoke grenades or do these other things. Mm-hmm. And then there's also your Titan. So you're actually juggling between three things, and all of them gain experience in different ways. It sounds really way too in-depth, but it's actually pretty intuitive. The more you use the gun, the more you use the Titan, the more XP you get. And then your pilot actually levels up in a slightly different way, in that you will have the option of unlocking a kind of currency that the name escapes me at the moment. And there is a certain amount of that given to each team at the end of the game. So say you managed to... You died a lot, but you managed to kill a lot of the non-playable characters running around the grunts that only give you 1 point. It will go, oh, you killed the most grunts. It kind of does the Overwatch thing of rewarding you even though you perhaps weren't playing the best. And so it's giving you these things. And then the more of these... I think they call pilot marks or something along those lines. The more of those you get, the higher level your pilot gets. And obviously, like I said, therefore you unlock a lot of things for your rig, but also aesthetic details, much like Halo games. You know, you get new helmets and all this kind of jazz. But the thing that has absolutely bowled me over with Titanfall 2, with something that was sorely missed from the first game, is that the campaign is perhaps one of the best campaigns of a first-person shooter I've played.
I've heard some great things about the campaign.
Now, not very long. Looking perhaps 4 or 5 hours, maybe?
Fine with me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of okay with that, too. There's 8 missions in total, or 9, I want to say. And it's very open-ended. The big plus of Titanfall 2, and why I'd recommend it over perhaps Battlefield 1, which I've been playing and enjoying a hell of a lot online, is that the game has come out and said, out of the gate, no, we're not going to divide our user base. We screwed up last time with that. All of our DLC will be free. Well, all of their season pass multiplayer content, at least. I'm hoping that means that they will do short campaign segments that you can buy, because I would be more than willing to pay £15 to get an extra few campaign missions and see
Similar to Wolfenstein and the Old Blood add-on.
Yes.
Yeah, like a separate little story thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Your name is Jack Cooper. Your robot is named BT. And BT is awesome.
Yeah, I've heard a lot. The relationship between the main character and the robot is one of the strong points.
Yeah, hot damn, the robot's amazing. Yeah. I mean,
The
guy you're playing as, Jack Cooper, is essentially nothing more than an embodiment of the player.
Well, Jack Cooper, that's a very average guy name.
It is, and then you see him at the end, and then he looks a bit weird. He's just kind of, he's not how I imagined him. The only bad thing actually about this game is the character models look really weird.
Okay.
There's a sergeant lady who you were taking commands from and doing all this stuff. The story's a bit muddled as well, in all fairness. The story kind of moves along very quickly. Mm-hmm. And that is because essentially how they've developed this game is they've gone, hey, can we make this bit fun, cool, let's wrap some story around it rather than the other way around.
Okay, good.
Which is perfectly fine.
That's what you want. You want good gameplay over
BT
story.
BT is awesome, so it doesn't really matter.
So yeah, maybe if the story's not so good, at least the dynamic between these characters is good.
I mean, the character design isn't bad. Don't get me wrong.
It's just a bit different.
It doesn't look right. There's something in how the characters are modelled, their proportions, that looks a bit odd.
With something like Halo, original Halo. Because they looked a bit odd.
No.
That was the graphical
That is a graphical style there. That is them looking like polygonal people.
Yeah.
You know the same way that Gears of War people look way too fucking big?
Yeah.
Titanfall kind of has this unnerving aspect of people look very, very thin.
Oh dear, a bit malnourished.
Way too malnourished, actually. You know, there's like a lady you fight towards the end of the game as one of the last bosses, and her head's just essentially on a stick. She kind of looks a bit like Flick from Bug's Life, you know, the main ant.
Sure, but she's meant to be human.
She's meant to be human, all of them are. They all look very gaunt and all look a bit weird.
That's a stylistic choice.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of curves to the characters, and then when you're portraying female characters especially...
Sure.
It becomes a little bit jaunty and a little bit polygonal.
Okay, I'm interested in seeing.
Yeah, it's not
fascinating.
It's not great. It's a bit weird. It's a bit distracting. But even my girlfriend who doesn't play games was just like, she looks really weird, and I was like, yeah, but
okay,
that's a minor qualm. In all fairness, you're not really seeing people other than in a small box on your head.
I guess most have armor on or with helmets.
Well, yeah, exactly. Most then they look fine. But yeah. I guess it's probably something to do with the character modeling to get these cool looking helmets and stuff on. Probably ends up fucking up the character models.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyways, good campaign. Some seriously, seriously fun gameplay elements. It almost feels like a first person puzzle platformer. In some respects.
Ooh, platforming.
A lot of you using the wall running. A lot of you... Okay. I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to give too much away.
No. Is it comparable to Mirror's Edge at all?
Mirror's Edge done right is what I would say.
Yeah.
Because I like Mirror's Edge in the breadth of what they were trying to do.
But they've managed to improve on... that, because that was the first of its kind to do that sort of thing. I know Titanfall...
To be honest with you, it's kind of more towards Portal than Mirror's Edge. Like,
okay.
It's got a lot of the, like, hey, I'll run up walls and free-running stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But the level design is so intuitive that you know where you should be going.
Good.
Which is always an issue I had with Mirror's Edge.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And not, hey, let's do a backflip. Let's not run them back and forth these walls, like... You will be running and there will be a corridor, say, and then the right half of it will be completely gone. So you'll have to run up the left wall because there'll be fire below you. And then you'll clearly see the break in the wall and your brain will go, okay, cool, I need to jump over to the left now. Mm. In a way that just feels very intuitive and feels very fast. I can't get enough of it. I'm looking at the achievements going, maybe I'll play it through on hard now.
Yeah, so it gives you an incentive to play through this story.
It definitely does. I mean, you know, we talked about Battlefield 1 last week. Battlefield 1 is a short campaign. I have no interest in playing through Battlefield 1 again. That was, for me, was a primer for the multiplayer. Mm. This, I'm actually kind of, when I'm sitting down, I'm like, should I play a bit more of the campaign or should I play multiplayer? Like, I don't know. It's got its hooks in me in a way that's very good. And the multiplayer is astounding. I'm actually kind of torn between playing Battlefield 1 and this.
Now
and you've Overwatch.
Find someone
I've
to
got
play it with
three
you.
Bloody good first-person shooters now. Like, where the fuck have they been for the last 4 years when I had to play Battlefield 4?
Mm.
Ah! But anyway, it's a good game. You should really go out and get it. It's not very expensive from what I've seen either.
Well, I am waiting for it to go down a little bit. I mean, it's come out, I think you can get about 400...
I've seen it. I bought it for
420
kroner in Denmark. Yeah. I've seen it for about the £35 mark some places
online.
You've
seen that?
I have.
I haven't found that cheap.
Generally averaging around 40 though. You know, there's a shop 2 discount every now and again where it's a little bit cheaper. But honestly, I recommend picking it up.
I really want it, and I will play it with you online.
You're more than welcome when I go back to the UK in a couple of weeks for the weekend to borrow it and beat the campaign because it's honestly worth it.
Yeah. I'd like to try it. Yeah. I was already sold on it. I'm quite excited about Titanfall 2. And what you said there is, I mean, just made me more sure about picking it up.
Grand.
Yep.
What else have you been playing then?
What else have I been playing? Well, I downloaded The Magic Circle, which is a very unique and interesting game. This is a first-person adventure game where you are essentially, you're like a playtester within an unfinished game.
Yeah.
And it starts off, and you can hear the voices of the game director and the game designer. They don't get along. They're just deciding on what's going to happen in the game. You're inside an unfinished game, basically. For example, you start off and you get given a weapon, and the director says, no, we don't want to give him the weapon yet. Then the weapon disappears, and you get to the final boss already right at the beginning. And then they just kind of abandon you and leave you where they go squabbling off. And okay. So you're left in the game. So you can kind of continue on into this unfinished game and have a look around, see what's going on. And then you hear this kind of ghostly voice about someone who's been in the game, who I think has been programmed by the developers, but he's kind of sentient and he's inside the game.
Yeah.
And he's saying, these guys, they've left this game like this. We need to kind of bring it back to life. So this will be your job. You're going to traverse this world and then bring some life into it.
Okay.
So you go on a journey where you can interact with objects which aren't quite finished. So you can go in and select an enemy, for example, and you can take control of it. You can decide, you know, if it can move or not, or if it's whose its ally is. Basically, if you make it your ally, then it will follow you.
Yeah.
You can take abilities from it and give it to other objects. So basically, it's a first-person puzzle game.
Yeah.
Really. There's no combat in the game as yet, but you can, influence the things around you to kind of tackle the stuff for you. I've played not a lot of it yet, but it's a very unique premise. And it's got a lot of style, and it's a lot of good ideas, and it's very well written. There's a lot of dialogue at the beginning of the game, and you can really establishes the game director as being a right dick.
Yeah,
basically, which is really good. And then the designer is like trying to make a good game out of this.
Yeah,
they're like, well, gameplay should come first, and he's all about the story and such, and wants to change things which really impact on the gameplay and make the game worse. So I assume these characters will appear again. They appear to you as the player as floating eyeballs, watching over the proceedings of the game. And this being that you've met within the game, it appears as like a stone face in various places. Now, how you bring life to stuff in the world is you find cracks which have some sort of energy. So you might be walking down a corridor and the wall may have some sort of crack in it. You can see it's multicolored energy in there, because at the beginning of the game, it's all black and white. And that just emphasizes the idea that you've got to bring this world to life. And so you suck the energy out, and you have a meter of energy. You can use that energy, as I say, to bring other creatures to life and get them to do your bidding. But there's a lot of depth to this. And so far, I've experienced some of the puzzle elements. I needed to get two characters to stand on two places.
Yeah.
And one was I couldn't get into because the door was half down. It was on a sort of space station. At this point, the game had changed into a 32-bit looking PlayStation game, which was a nice surprise. So I had to get a mechanical rat to follow. Well, I had to get an ability to create waypoints and put a waypoint on the thing so it could activate it. And there's a lot of, it's quite cerebral, there's a lot of thinking there.
Yeah. It's essentially, from my limited knowledge of programming, it's essentially doing what you are doing when you are programming.
Yeah.
You are going into these characters by pressing square button, and then you will get a list of the behavior of that character.
Yeah.
And then by interacting with other characters, you can take away all of their variables.
Yes,
so
this is exactly
how they attack, who they follow, how they move, what they do. And you apply these to these characters to do these different things. And then the waypoint ability that you've picked up is essentially you kind of almost having like spawn points or whatever. And you're just going, go there and go on this thing.
Yeah.
It looks super fun. It looks really interesting. I would argue perhaps not so much early PlayStation for me. It reminded me more of things like Doom and Marathon.
Okay,
it's
kind
of early PC in its aesthetic, but I think, to be honest,
in that
kind
section
of
the game, at least, as it begins, it looks a lot more like a modern game, only in black and white. But it's really interesting. It's a really oddball game.
It looks super cool,
and
man.
I think it's a great one. I think it's really good, and it's got potential to be an amazing experience, and unlike anything else.
From what you showed me, I'm actually very interested to go home and pick that up. It looks super fun.
I'd like to see how it progresses. I mean, if it manages to keep up these interesting ideas and the gameplay, how that will progress as well.
Yeah.
And what you can edit and what you can mess with, and then how... I don't think it's going to be a game you can predict what happens next, because you're in this world which could constantly change on the developer's will. So I think the story is going to be a fantastic thing to see that kind of unravel and see what happens.
What kind of sparked my curiosity is actually how much freedom you get to play with the story. I mean, you know, if you are able to go into these characters and you are able to edit their behavior, I think half of the joy for me is a game like Skyrim and things people get out of that is that you will be making the things happen. You know, you will be getting from A to B by doing your own stupid, crazy things.
Yeah, you could. There is a potential to do very weird, crazy things. You can name every character you meet.
Yeah.
So you could put your own stamp on the game as well. So that's...
I wonder, actually, when you were doing that, if later on in the game, if you were... Well, when you program, when you give a name to something, you can... draw that name into other things, so you can make the basis of was it like Corpse was the name of one of the things, so you could essentially make the cyber rat like Corpse in programming by naming it the same thing. And I'm wondering then, would all of those abilities travel through the things?
I don't know. I did try because a lot of some things are called there's nothing. The abilities will be listed as nothing. So I tried calling the object nothing.
Yeah.
But that didn't change any of the variables or anything like that. So I don't know how much you actually can influence. You can influence things a lot.
Yeah.
But how deep that goes, I'm not quite sure yet.
I've seen a lot of games with this kind of... this pseudo programming under the hood thing going on. There's one game for Steam which is essentially like Legend of Zelda called Hack and Slash that I've wanted to try for a long, long time.
Uh-huh.
And it's essentially you hack all of the objects in the environment to do things for you, and it looks super cool, but it's like Legend of Zelda. So essentially you're playing a Zelda like top down adventure game. But then you just kind of fuck in with everything and making bushes glitch you through levels and stuff like that. So I hope there's a lot of that kind of stuff in this, because it looks like...
Yeah, at the moment it looks like it's going to be a purely first-person experience, but who knows if that will change partway through the game or not.
Yeah, who knows if it'll turn into like a third-person adventure.
I just can't predict where this game is going to go, and that's what makes it so exciting to play.
Yeah, that's rad.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, like, I completely wasn't sold on the game based on the thumbnail. I was like, I don't know what that is. It looks like a white Ku Klux Klan thing. Is this going to be some weird scribbly indie platformer? But no, I'm pleasantly surprised. And I'm glad you showed it to me.
So it's on offer.
Yeah, it
is.
At
the moment. It's £10, just over £10 at the moment on the PlayStation Store. It should be about 16, I think. It's retail price. So give it a go if that sounds interesting to you. It's certainly... it's got my interest.
Yeah, me too. Unlike another game you showed me today.
Oh, Dangerous Golf.
Yeah, well,
that was on offer.
That was not very interesting. In
£5.50 or something.
Yeah.
I only picked it up at this price. I heard there's not a lot to it. And I think when it originally came out, it was like £15.
Yeah, I think so.
So at Fiverr, I was like, yeah, why not? I'll give it a go. I like golf. I like Burnout.
You do.
It looks like the both things melded together.
There are two things I know about you. It's like you like golf and Burnout. So, yes, this is a perfect game for you. It was a match made in
But I was a little disappointed that there didn't seem to be as much depth in setting up your shot as I hoped there would be. Unlike a traditional golf game where you have a lot of variables at your control when you hit the ball, you can kind of choose what direction you're going to aim in and then hit one button.
Yeah.
And then it goes. And with that initial shot, I couldn't really do a lot.
Yeah, it kind of fucked me over, actually, when we were playing it co-op. And I wanted to, like, swing and press X to, like, try and power up my shot, which is instinctual for me in any golf game.
Mm.
And I pressed X and then just made my ball drop. And I was like,
because it has a lot of controls. Basically, it gives you an overview of what the game is. It's playing golf inside a room, basically. If you were to play golf inside a room, maybe a dining room with loads of valuable assets littered all over it, and you still got to get the ball in a hole, but the game asks you to create as much damage as possible.
Yes.
So that's what you want to get. The highest score, you want to make the most damage. A lot like Burnout Crash Mode.
You want to break things.
You've got to break things. So, you know, you can see, you can get a hint and find out what's the most valuable things in the room. And you can try and aim for them before you eventually get the ball in the hole. But as we say, in that initial shot, you can't do a lot until you get sort of the crash breaker thing, like compare it with Burnout, where then you can fire the ball off once it's hit the ground and then bounce it around and influence which direction it moves in.
Yeah, which is a lot more fun than the original shot.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I watched, they have a sequence, segment, on giantbomb.com, which is called Unfinished. And they, the guys who made this were previous Burnout EA employees who come in and said, like, hey, this is this game. Their argument for not having that kind of stuff on the shot was like, well, we're not making a golf game. We just want to get you in quick. We want to have you break stuff and have a good time. Mm. But because you don't really do any of that stuff, I didn't really feel like I had that much control, and breaking things, which is something I can do in pretty much any game these days, really didn't have that much satisfaction.
Didn't have the satisfaction. No. That's the really weird thing about this game. It's a game that sells itself on smashing stuff up. Yet while you're doing that, it's not actually that satisfying.
No, not definitely
like Burnout.
Not. No, I mean,
not like playing Burnout Revenge and smashing through all the cars.
Well, the thing is, like, you've got so much more control over that, you know what I mean? You're the person pulling the trigger. I mean, like, hitting the throttle, you're the person, like, driving the car and smashing it, and then you're like, oh, man, I did that.
Yeah.
There's a lot less of that feeling with this game because you are just essentially pushing forward and then the ball will fall where the ball will fall.
It doesn't have enough sort of force behind it.
No, definitely not.
Well, I'm happy I didn't pay too much for it. I really wanted to play this game and now my satisfaction.
No, I mean, that's the thing, right? We played this game in like 20 minutes. Maybe there is a bit more depth to it.
My curiosity has been satisfied.
Yes, quenched. Yes.
Quenched. But we played it, for 20 minutes.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I've got no in, you know, like, you showed me Magic Circle for, like, 3 minutes, and my mind was ablaze with possibilities. We played this game for, like, 20 minutes after, like, a 10-minute Tony Hawk-style tutorial where they told us absolutely
that
everything
tutorial was
that could happen in the game.
Too much.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said to you, I think they got stick when it launched because there was no tutorial, and so I think they're just trying to cover all the bases. But this
made it seem like a lot more complicated than it actually is.
Yeah, exactly. Press the stick, smash stuff. That's pretty much. Well, to be honest with you, like, I think maybe the anger of the lack of the tutorial is probably stemming from what we experienced, the fact that there's not really a lot of control in the game.
Yeah.
And I think people were probably like, well, we need a fucking tutorial. You need to tell us how to play this game. And then there isn't really much to do. You know, like, I think it is what it is, which is a bit of a shame. But
there you go. That's our thoughts on Dangerous Golf. If you're curious, try it. If not, well, yeah, don't bother.
I mean, you know, what else are you going to spend a fiver on?
What else? You can think, actually, I think a better thing is spend a fiver on.
So can I, actually.
Yeah.
Something I did spend some money on, though. That was also on the PlayStation 4 sale, was the Uncharted collection.
Uncharted.
Yes.
These weren't Uncharted territories for you, though, were they?
They were not. I have pretty much got to the end of Uncharted 1, and then I had to give the copy I lent back. I don't think I've actually ever beaten the game.
And you've played Uncharted 2.
I've played the opening of Uncharted 2 with you, and I never played Uncharted 3 Drake's Deception, and my girlfriend's brother has recently purchased a PlayStation 4 with these three games and the nice Nathan Drake PS4 because he quite liked the first
that blue
games.
One.
Yes. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll give it a go because he's coming here at Christmas anyway, so maybe I can give Uncharted 4 a go. But obviously, if I'm going to play the end of the bloody series, then I want to know
play
what
the rest.
Went on
How
before.
Much was it?
It was about £15, I think, which is all right. I saw physical copies boxed in the UK for about 20-odd when I was home last. So I was like, well, I want to get a physical box copy, but some part of me is now just going, okay, do you need to buy a physical box copy for an extra fiver on top of a digital price? And the answer was no, because, I mean, in all fairness, I think I already own all three Uncharted games on the PS3 anyway, not that I've ever bloody played them. So I played it.
Did it feel like a PS4 game? Did it feel like it was a nice remastered version of a PS3
game? Not necessarily. It felt like a very good game. I think
it is.
I think the story and the writing in Uncharted is, as most people know, it's bloody great. Impeccable.
It's like watching a TV show. Every cutscene you look forward to because it's so well done.
Yeah, but that means that the gameplay between it feels pretty damn monotonous. Fortunately, I've played this game before. I know a lot of the cadences of, hey, there's going to be traps in this section, so you need to not run ahead because otherwise you get speared by things. I can also still pull off a pretty good headshot in that game, I was just doing that and shooting fools.
It
and
controls
then I got,
well.
It does. Yeah. I mean, I got an achievement in the first segment pretty much for like 50 headshots, and I was just like, there's a lot of people getting killed in these sections. Like, maybe there is something to this whole joke of like Nathan Drake's the nicest serial killer in the world. Ha 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 ha. But
what the main gameplay is, isn't it?
It's my girlfriend's sister was there, and as my girlfriend was out, she was just sitting down watching me play this. And she was like, oh, this looks really nice. It's like a bit like Tomb Raider. I said, yeah. I said, to be honest, I said, the newest Tomb Raider, which she had played, I said, is kind of a direct response to this. But she was kind of laughing at some of the stuff, like some of the animation in that game is not aged very well, even though they've managed to smooth all the textures out and upgrade some of those. Like, Nathan Drake swimming. He's just kind of kicking his legs as if he's falling and like windmilling, if you are familiar with hardcore dancing from the early 2000s. Okay. He's just kind of like babooning his arms around his head in the most exaggerated swimming motion I've ever seen. And yeah, it's a bit odd. It feels a bit out of place with the rest of the gameplay.
Yeah.
Some of the platforming's not very tight, especially after games like Assassin's Creed came out after this and perfected it. Like, some of you wanting to jump to clearly a ledge within your distance, and then you jump, but because it isn't the exact jump you should have made at that moment in time, Drake just kind of hits it and bounces off and dies.
Ghost Shell games have progressed.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean,
even from something as amazing as Uncharted was at the time, we've actually come further than that now.
Hell of a lot further. Yeah. But the story's still enjoyable. That's why I'm playing it. I'm like, okay, cool. I remember Uncharted 2 being a step up from this and kind of taking in a lot of the nuances of things like Assassin's Creed.
The stealth stuff in Uncharted 2.
It's not my favourite aspect, but hey,
no.
I'll get through it. It'll be all right. To be honest with you, I'm just playing it on easy mode. I'm just trying to blitz through it as fast as I can so I can get the story. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
It's all right. Yeah, £15. I mean, three spectacular games, at least in their narrative sense.
Yeah,
As most people know, that's generally what I'm looking for.
You may come to a point where you get a bit bored of it. Apparently, I was chatting to my friend Gareth, and he got his PS4 with the Uncharted Collection, and he likes them. He's the same as you. He's sung their praises, but he did say he kind of lost interest partway through the second one. He's like, I think he finished the second one, and he's like, I don't really feel like playing the third one. I kind of done enough of that now.
Well, like, that's the interesting thing, right? You got to bear in mind there was like Uncharted 1 and Uncharted 2 was about 2 years
between
them.
There were years
between
them,
and there was
a
couple between Uncharted 2 and 3, and there's been, five, maybe, between Uncharted 3 and 4. But the thing is, right, I feel the biggest flaw with those games is aging of media aside. It's just the fact that the first game goes on way too fucking long.
It does, isn't it?
Like, you could have compartmentalized that story a little bit better, I think, and not had so many, like, okay, cool, well, you're going to walk through this area and kill all these enemies, and then you're going to see a brief 5 seconds of plot, and then you're going to kill a load more enemies, and then you'll get a cutscene.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how it goes, though. That's how it goes.
Uncharted.
It is. Uncharted territory for me, but alright.
Alright. Fantastic. Well, have I been playing anything else, you may ask, Matthew Boyle? And
I was about to.
I will answer that with yes. For the first time, I wrapped my copy of Yoshi's Woolly World.
Oh, really? About time.
I was thinking, alright. It was before World Cinema Wednesday.
Yes.
A weekly occurrence I have here.
You're advertising it as if it's something the listeners at home could come to.
Well,
I mean, if you're in Denmark, drop us a line. Maybe we'll sort you out.
But yes, I was with our friend Toby Brown, and I thought, well, let's just play a game while we're waiting for it to start. And I thought, I knew this game would appeal to her, so I've got this game. I haven't played it yet. What on Yoshi's Woolly World? She goes, oh, yeah. I really wanted to play that. So we were playing it, and it was hard to put down. And you know this game's good.
I played this game through with my girlfriend, and it was pretty bloody awesome.
Yeah, I was waiting for someone to play it with, in co-op. And so we had a good time playing that. It's a great game.
It's a good game.
And you were saying the other week how nostalgic Mario made me feel, and I loved all the colours and made me feel like a kid again and again. This is just another great Nintendo product that just is magical. Yes. I think that's the only word I can describe it. And it's a lot of fun. It is. And that co-op aspect helps.
It does immensely. Yeah. It's such a... It's a flawless game in my eyes. A little bit easy in some respects, but as you get a little into that game,
I didn't feel particularly challenged.
It ramps up.
I wanted to collect all the collectibles.
Yeah, and when you do, they unlock like special levels.
Yeah,
and those you can't play co-op.
Yeah,
though playing those co-op is just way too hard because one person will miss these incredibly intricate jumps with falling platforms, and they'll just die, and then they'll float, and then they get frustrated, and they'll not.
I don't think I saw any of that.
It's only once you've collected all the collectibles in the world you unlock these special levels. Mm. But it's a damn good game. You should play more of it anyways.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm really excited about playing more of that. I also had to go a demo of a game on the PS4, Yu-Gi-Oh! Legacy of the Duelist.
It's time to duel! Yeah.
Now, me and Matt have been playing a bit of Pokemon cards lately. You could say we've got quite into the hobby.
Yes.
And we have a monthly Poker Night, as we call it. And that made me curious to actually see what Yu-Gi-Oh! Was about, because how I understood it was a little bit more complicated than Pokemon.
Yeah, from what I remember, I played a little bit of Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards back in the day.
And it is a bit more complicated. I won't explain the rules here.
Well, I mean, I think the key of it is there's item cards, you have monsters on the field, which you can actually play
five
face
monsters.
Down.
So you can play, kind of, so the other player doesn't know what monster you've got, and you can surprise them, because basically it's a bit like Top Trumps.
Yeah, a little bit.
If you've got a higher attack than the other guy has, and you kill them, and then you can put them in defense positions or you put them in attacking positions, and then you've got trap cards which you can play in a similar
face
way
down or face up.
You could again trick the player. You have life points. Your goal is to get the player's life points
down to zero.
I expect anyone who's seen the anime kind of know a little bit about how the game plays out.
Heart of the cards, my friend, is what it's all about.
But there were, I think, 18 tutorials to begin with. I managed to get through half of them. I played it for quite some time. I was like, I can't take any more information right now. I'm going to come back to this later and learn the rest of the game. But essentially, I've got the basics, because it's not only one type of monster. There's certain type of monsters. You have to have a separate deck for certain monsters, and you have to sacrifice other monsters to bring these more powerful monsters out. And some of them... there's one that's in several parts, isn't there?
Exodia.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess the idea is you're in five parts, and to get five out.
No one in their right mind actually plays with Exodia, from what I know of that card game, because it's nigh on fucking impossible to actually use it and win. I think it's actually banned in tournament play as well. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's novel.
I had some parts of Exodia, actually. Yeah. I wish I kept them, because they're worth a mint now.
I don't have any Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards, but I'm interested to try the game out with another human being.
Yeah.
More so interested in playing it physically than playing the digital version of the game, but if it ever came up cheap...
They are very, very cheap to buy the physical cards.
Yeah.
You can actually get... I think they are celebrating also their 20th anniversary in the same way Pokemon is.
Yeah.
And they have a nice golden box which has like a lot of the classic cards from the anime. So like
you have Blue Eyes, White
Blue
Dragon.
Eyes and like Dark Magician.
Yes.
And I think there's also Exodia in that, maybe. I don't know.
Anyways. Yeah. Nice.
Sorry to go off on a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tangent for people who are what the fuck is Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, a lot of Game Boy Color games that I look forward to.
Oh, I have
a
memory of playing one of the games in Game Boy Color as a child.
It's a fucking lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! Games.
And I hated it. I didn't know what was going on as a kid. And I went to Toys R Us with the excuse that it was an unwanted gift and traded it in for probably a Pokemon game, I think.
Yeah, better choice. Remember.
Pokemon Pinball, actually, I think
they
traded
Pokemon
it for.
Pokemon Pinball's a damn good game. Yeah. So is the Pokemon card game, the trading card game.
Oh, yeah.
A damn good game.
It's a very accessible game. It's a lot of fun. But there is a lot of depth to it if you think it out a little bit more, yeah.
I mean, it's got a campaign for one thing, which I'm sure the Yu-Gi-Oh! Games have as well. But
well, this one I played didn't.
Yeah, okay.
But I like the... talk about the game I played on PS4. It's a nice interface, very user-friendly.
Yeah.
So the game doesn't seem half bad I don't know what else there is to it if there's a campaign or anything, but if you want a digital version, it's PS4. It's called Legacy of the Duelist, and if you're interested, you can download a demo which lets you learn all about the game.
I've always wanted to play Eye of Judgment on the PS3, that whole augmented card game they released. That looked pretty cool. It's probably ass because it didn't do very well.
Might be all right. You
Sony
know.
A lot of money, but hey, I
think
I might
try
to.
It as a unique sort of idea.
Yeah, I also wanted to play the demo of World of Final Fantasy, but I didn't have time.
No, there is a demo. Yeah, I saw that.
As people
you
told
say
me,
it's something like Pokemon.
It is the Pokemon of Final Fantasy.
Yeah,
is Pokemon with like the depth turned up to 10 because everything. Do you ever play Final Fantasy 10?
10, yes.
Do you know the sphere grid from Final Fantasy 10? You know, like when you level up your characters.
Yes.
And they've got
How you
essentially you have sphere grids on all of your monsters, and so you can go crazy depths, and essentially you can customize your Pokemon, for lack of whatever the fuck they use in Final Fantasy, in interesting and loads of ways. So you know, you could make your Squirtle like an amazing fire Pokemon if you really wanted to. I think.
What?
But, you know, it's just that's the way the leveling goes. You can do all of these crazy things, and essentially it allows you a lot more customization.
It's interesting it's available on Vita and PS4.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an RPG, right? I mean, Dragon Quest Builders is also available on the Vita.
That's a bit of a trend.
Yes.
If it isn't a Minecraft-type game, it's a Pokemon-type game.
Yeah, but I mean, the Vita's still doing incredibly well in Japan, and that's the thing. It's just not doing well anywhere else. Mm. It's a shame.
Yeah, I often see games for Vita. I think it was that fighting game, and it's actually turns out it's a visual novel. But I see anime characters and think, oh, is that a new fighting game?
Not for you, Parry.
No, not for me. Couldn't be further, more different, I suppose.
Indeedy.
The only other things I've been playing this week are more Pokemon Black, which I'm up to an annoying point with. It's probably said before, I need to level up my Pokemon, but there's not a lot of opportunity to do that.
No, you've said.
And I'm trying to get on this boat, right? You know, every Pokemon game's got a boat.
Yes.
And the SS,
the
whatever. And it only, it's only functioning in the evening.
Okay.
Now, when is the evening, would you say, Matthew?
Right about now, Tom Parry, which is 6 o'clock.
I've tried it at 8, and I've tried it at 10, and that's not worked. I guess 10's the night time.
Maybe.
So I think I've got to get it at 6 or 7.
Maybe about 5.
I could just change my clock, couldn't I?
You could.
I tried it at 5. That was too early for it.
Okay, cool. Try it at 6. Go after this podcast. Run and do it. It'll be fine.
Because I need to level up these Pokemon. Because I'm excited. It's Pokemon Moon, which is one I'm going to get.
I think I'll probably get Sun, because I like the Fire Lion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to finish Black first, but it's slow progress is what I'm saying. Played Worms, played Destiny on Thursday night gaming session with my friend Gareth. Destiny was nice. Pick up play again. It's been a while. I did some of the Halloween stuff where you can get these masks. You have to go around people. What's it called? That main world? The tower?
Yes.
Tower. And you speak to various people and give you candy. And you get this candy and you give it to someone and you get these masks you can wear. That's
pretty
fun.
Cool. Yeah.
And so, Destiny is just a very playable game. I mean, its controls are so smooth.
It's brilliant, to be honest with you. As I said with the whole, where were these first-person shooters thing earlier, Destiny would have been a lot more better and a lot more accessible.
But you never played Taken King, did you?
I did not play Taken King.
No.
But, you know.
There's a lot more.
Well, if they would have made it so I could have upgraded to Taken King in a way that didn't cost me like twice as much as what I paid for Destiny, maybe I would have done that.
Yeah. I got Destiny dirt cheap, so when I was able to get the Taken King expansion at a discounted price, I was like, well, I'll
exactly.
And it's been keeping me busy ever since. I haven't bought Iron Banner.
From what I hear, Rise of Iron.
Rise
no
of
point.
Iron.
It's pretty worthless.
So, but I'm still, there's a few things I need to do on the other, so I haven't gone down that route.
Yeah, anything else I've really been playing is Pokemon Go. I'm going to tell you some interesting numbers, Tom Parry. So I believe I mentioned the Halloween thing last week, right? Of the whole, like, hey, your candy
promotion.
Costs are cut in half and you get more candy and whatever. So after that, I was left with, essentially, I have 25 Pokemon caught now. I could potentially catch another 20. And that includes the regional exclusive ones like Kangaskhan, Farfetch, and Taurus if I'm lucky enough to get them from eggs. So realistically, I'm probably looking at being able to catch 17 Pokemon. So I sat down.
17 more?
17 more Pokemon. Yeah. I was like, right, okay, cool. Let's have a figure out the statistics of there's a buddy system in the game, as I explained, where you put a buddy with you and wherever you walk, then that buddy gains candy over a certain amount of walking distance.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, right, okay, cool. Well, apart from some Pokemon that I'm very, very unlikely to get from catching, and there's four of those, that's Aerodactyl, that's Chansey, that's Tangler, and that's Magmar. Some of them come from 5k eggs, because there's a 2, a 5, and a 10k egg, which you put in an incubator, which can hatch while you walk. Mm. Again, and over those distances.
They're a microtransaction, aren't they? The incubators, is that right?
To buy more than the base incubator you get, they are a microtransaction, I tend to buy, I pay 39 krona a week, because I'm running, and it's giving me incentive to run as well.
I watched the South Park episode about the microtransactions today. I don't know if you've seen that.
No,
new Terrence and Philip game that comes out.
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's if you want to laugh...
I'll give it a watch.
Because microtransactions are still very current.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, okay, well, other than these ones I get... And you can only get most of those from 10k eggs, which are very rare drops. Mm-hmm. And so... there's like 15 or 20 Pokemon in these 10k eggs.
Yeah.
And so the chances of me getting the three I need out of those are very slim.
Yeah.
And so I was like, right, okay, well, let's figure out of the whatever it is, of whatever's left of the 14 or so Pokemon, I think it's 30 maybe, that I can actually obtain from candy. How much would I physically have to walk?
Okay, oh, you worked it out.
And so I...
You've been thinking about it far too much, Matthew.
I looked at it. Well, no, to be honest, it was kind of made me dumb with Pokemon Go, because I wanted to see how realistic it would be for me to get to the stage where I would have completed, in inverted commas, Pokemon Go.
Go on.
So, for me to get all of the ones with 3K candy, I would have to walk 1,736 kilometers. Bear in mind that is actually further than me walking to Wales in a straight line from Denmark. And to get the ones with 5k candy, bear in mind, that's three Pokemon, I would have to walk 620 kilometres. Grand total of 2,416 kilometres, which means I could walk to Wales and back and probably go up to Sweden.
Yeah, they don't want you to get these things straight away, do they?
Yeah, they don't. But unfortunately, that's a bit shit.
That's extreme.
It is.
That's more than I would have thought.
And the thing is, like, even though they're adjusting their spawn rates and stuff, I can't actually catch a lot of the Pokemon I need within our vicinity. Even, like, running and going out, like, 5 kilometres distance away... There are no Pokemon that I need within these distances now. Every now and again, I will catch a Squirtle because we're quite nearly situated the water.
So you get more water Pokemon.
Yeah, but that's like the least of my worries. Like, admittedly, I've seen a lot of American people on Reddit and they're like going like, "Oh my god, I can't get any fucking water Pokemon." So they're in the same boat with fire Pokemon.
Well, not in a boat, are they? Because there's no water Pokemon.
No, they're not. Well, if they are, they're on dry land.
Yeah,
yeah, but. It's all right. So yeah, I'm kind of maybe done with Pokemon Go now, finally, after 6 months.
You should never have looked that up.
Yeah, well, I worked it out and I'm just like, oh, well, cool. It's something I'll do when I'm running now, but I'm not that bothered.
Don't spend too much time.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame.
Thinking about it.
Other than that, what have we done?
They could change it, though, any time.
Yeah, they could. And they've said they're going to introduce dailies, and I'm hoping there'll be some way to get like 5 candy per day for that Pokemon, which will cut out.
But I guess they want you to do the microtransactions. They want you
this is the thing, right?
Yeah.
Even with the microtransactions, and like I said, I've been spending like £4 equivalent a week on this. Fortunately, I'm in a position where I can do that. I could spend a lot more if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But even hatching eggs... I still have to walk the distance to hatch the fucking
eggs. You can't get
eggs.
Something like speed boots.
No,
there isn't anything like that.
I tried today. I toyed with the idea and I bought some incense which attracts Pokemon to you that aren't anywhere near you.
Yeah.
Still got the same shit. Still got like Rattatas and things, so it didn't. That was a bit of a waste of money. I was like,
but it's working though, isn't it?
No, it isn't, because it's kind of turned me off to the idea now. Because, like I said, even incubators.
Maybe you're not the only one, but.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit sad. I want to get to level 25 at least, because I'm very near there, and then maybe I'll give it a rest until they do whatever they're going to do inevitably for Pokemon Sun and Moon, hopefully like Alola forms or something like that. But
Do you think they potentially would release the Sun and Moon Pokemon before the Gold and Silver Pokemon?
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I think they'd do the Alola forms from Sun and Moon. So, you know, you can get the crazy looking...
You don't think they're ever going to do the rest of the Pokemon?
I think they're going to do the rest of the Pokemon. I just don't think they'll do... I don't think they'll skip, like, what, four generations to get to the new ones. And that seems like the
most
logical thing.
But they're the current ones.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, like...
Until they re-release one of the older games.
You can
again.
Do all of these new Meowths and Vulpixes and Diglets and whatever. You know, I want Hanson Dugtrio.
Yeah.
But we'll see how it goes.
Because people recognise them, won't they? Because they see what they originally evolved from if they're not so familiar with the games.
Yeah. And I bought one or two things in Germany yesterday.
Oh, what did you get?
I bought up PacPix, which is the Pac-Man DS
game. I've been curious about that one.
Yeah, me too. It's a launch title for the DS, and I never picked it up back
in the day. What can you do on that game?
I don't actually know. I know you've got to draw and solve a lot of puzzles. To be honest with you, I haven't thought about this game in about 10 years.
No.
So
I saw it. Good price.
Yeah, it was €3. So I was just like, I'll have that for that price. I also picked up a copy of Tingle's Rosie Rupee Land for my friend Anna's, one of my Danish collectors, because it was €5 and that game's going up
in
price.
And it's not in German, it's
Well, fortunately, Tom, every European release by Nintendo is in all five main European languages.
Yes.
And then
Plock
I picked
up... wasn't.
What?
For the Super Nintendo.
No.
Plock.
No.
Not that I can play it
anymore.
Well,
I mean, that's because Super Nintendo games are a bit earlier than this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I picked up these two wonderful things of Roller Coaster Funwear and Crazy Golf, which are two Phoenix titles.
They managed to make that dog very disturbing.
Crazy Golf looks amazing.
Crazy Golf has a dog on the front, which...
it's got a very Five Nights at
Freddy's
vibe.
It's got a very human proportions to the body.
Yes.
It's got quite a big chest, you know, it's quite a buff.
Yeah.
But then head's massive and the eyes...
Just dead stare.
Dead.
Just dead.
Not
loss
to
of life.
This shark that's about to.
Yeah,
jump
the shark looks a little bit better than the dog, actually, in all fairness.
Let me know what it's like. I like golf games.
I'm sure I will subject you to it, Tom.
Let's do best worst game.
Yeah, let's do a best worst game.
Because I think we should do another one soon.
Yeah, we can crack that out next week. That'll
I'd like
be fine.
To.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you buying anything else?
Yeah, I'll just quickly go through a couple of things I've bought. Legend of Bruce Lee for the Game Boy Advance.
Cool. Let me know what that is. I've heard it's pretty good.
Me too. Godzilla Domination also for the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, really? I did not know there was a Godzilla game.
Fighting game looks a lot like King of Monsters.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
But it's...
I need to buy that.
I've heard it's got a limited roster of characters. I was talking to our friend Maddie about it. And he's got this game and he said it was good fun, but limited.
That's a shame.
I bought a Super Nintendo game.
Oh, really?
I'm hoping I can play it. It's a PAL Super Nintendo game. For those not in the know, I have a problem with my Super Nintendo. It can only play American... Well, it's I don't know why it's stuck on a sort of region.
Yeah,
it's stuck on Japanese region.
You have a region modded PlayStation, and so it's kind of in a weird limbo where the switch is broke.
So certain PAL games don't work on it until I go inside it and make that switch work again.
You should probably do that.
Yeah,
I
don't want to mess it up. I'm worried that if I go inside and try and fiddle with it, then it won't do anything.
Yeah, but come on, what have you got to lose?
Well, if I got a Super Nintendo, so I got to lose.
Let's get a new one.
Do you want to hear what I bought?
What?
Black Hawk, which is known as Blackthorn in the US.
Yes, it's a Blizzard game, right? Where you're a guy with long black hair.
I saw a review of this, and I thought, now that looks like a good game.
Hey, isn't that a pricey title?
Well, £22.
For a cart.
For a cart.
Okay, well, that isn't as bad as I thought. I thought it was Lost Vikings territory.
Apparently, according to Retro Collect, it's a common game.
Really? Yeah,
apparently. But it seems to demand... I saw it in CX when I was asked back in the UK for £30.
Yeah.
Because they trade in old games now.
Well, CX sells NES, Super Nintendo, Neo Geo Pocket Color, weirdly, was one of the ones. I guess because the library's so small, they were cool.
I knew if I could get it for less than £30, then I'd got a reasonable deal there.
Oh, man, I can't wait to go to hit up some CEXs when I go back home, because Wales used to be a treasure trove of amazing games. I'm hoping it still is.
Yeah, but don't buy any Pokemon games from CEX.
No, I'm not going to pay £70 for half.
I saw one for £84
in
the box with the Pokewalker.
Yeah,
it's like £84.
In the heat of... Pokemon Gold and Silver Want from the general public.
I bought another couple of games. I didn't know Snowboard Kids was on the DS.
No, neither did I.
But I bought it.
Yeah, I had an interesting epiphany yesterday of why I'm never going to get a full set of DS games.
There's 2,000 odd, isn't there?
Well, other than that, that aspect didn't actually bother me as much as it probably should have.
Yeah.
I was in Germany and we were in a border shop and they had...
This is where you get stuff cheap.
They had two fucking huge bins of DS games for €5 sealed. I literally went through pretty much everything in the bins and found nothing I wanted.
No, because there's a lot of...
All of them were unique. There wasn't even doubles.
It's like a million Imagine games.
Oh my God. Like, Imagine games, like crap spin-offs to Disney films that went straight to DVD.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of German exclusives as well, which would also put me off collecting. But...
Yeah, I'd say out of the 2,000 odd games, there's probably half of them are crap.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people talk bad about the Game Boy for shovelware, but... There must be a lot on the DS.
Yeah, they've just appeared on Retro Collect now, so that's interesting. Because that's how I found out about Snowboard Kids for the DS. Okay. I was looking through, logging my collection, I saw...
How many did you end up on your DS?
57.
Oh, shit, I've got more DS games than you, that's interesting.
I think I got 57.
I got 84. Like I thought you would have had a lot more DS titles.
I did go
through that phase, though, didn't I, of like trying to hoover up every JRPG for that system while I still could.
I'm at about 60 now. Because I picked up.
I only need like 4 JRPGs now for the DS. I'm pretty happy with that.
Well done. Yeah. I imagine some of them are quite pricey now as well.
Some of the ones I have are, believe it or not, one or two of the ones I don't have are just like Dungeon Maker and stuff like this, and they're not that expensive.
No.
I still need to get the third bloody Rune Factory game, though. Yes. And that's pretty expensive these days.
Yeah. Zorro. Quest for Justice.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, how could that go wrong, Tom? Your last forays into Zorro have been so fucking great.
The Wii one wasn't that bad, and this was released around the same time, I think,
it's
as the Wii
one.
It's
about the same
studio,
at least.
I think it probably is.
Okay, fair enough.
This
then,
was
not
a European copy, like the Legend of Zorro that I bought. I think it's called Legend of Zorro or something, can't remember, the Wii one. This is called Zorro Quest for Justice, and it was an American copy of the game.
Yeah.
Very cheap. It was about £7.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. So I looked at a few videos on YouTube and thought, this looks like a really downgraded version of the Wii game.
Okay.
But I've got a thing about collecting Zorro games.
Yeah. Why? I don't know. Because they've done nothing but harm you physically and mentally since you bought them.
Well, yeah. So... the Game of Color wasn't good. The Wii one's all right, and this one I'm hoping to be all right. Oh yeah, the PS2 one was
still need to
Shadow
play
Zorro. Them. That was bad.
Still need to play the Game Boy Color one. I haven't plucked up the courage to do it yet.
No.
Oh, speaking of Game Boy stuff, I completely clean forgot. I walked into a charity shop in Billund the other day.
Oh, I saw this. You bought three bloody Game Boys.
Bought three Game Boys and a shit ton of games for just under £40. Yeah, so there were three absolutely mint DMGs, two copies of Donkey Kong 94, which is an incredible game, Space Invaders, which if you plug it into a Super Game Boy is actually the Super Nintendo version, so bang for your buck there, Mercenary Force, which is an impeccable shooter game, Star Wars, Mario and Yoshi, Kirby's Dream Land, FIFA 96, Super Mario Land, and Dr. Mario.
Okay.
And then five or six multi-carts.
That's great. I mean, it's the beautiful console. The original Game Boy's got like a classic...
Look at that. That up there, that cartridge is literally a T-Rex with a mohawk and sunglasses riding a motorcycle, and it says Super Game Boy 62-in-1.
Lovely.
And you know what? Genuinely 62 unique games on it, so it's pretty all right.
Not bad. Good going, Matthew Boyer.
Yeah, I was super happy. After 5 years of me going into charity shops in around our workplace, I finally found
really
a bloody
need
Game
any
Boy.
More Game Boys?
No, not really. To be honest with you, it was more along the lines of, well, my DMG that I have at home currently, all three of these are in better nick. So I was I can swap mine out for one thing.
Yeah.
But beyond that, there's a lot of really nice trade fodder in there that I can see go to good homes, such as Mercenary Force.
Yeah.
And I was also thinking, well, maybe someone would be so inclined to trade a very, very nice condition DMG, because it's not something you see very often, for some Game Boy Colors that I don't have.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, yeah, this is probably the cheapest way about going about getting the full retail colors.
Sounds good.
I'm still missing three.
I might even be interested in a DMG.
Oh, really?
Because it is a classic thing, and I'd like to have one.
I would say you should be interested in that copy of Mercenary Force. It's a very good game.
Okay.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that
off. Okay.
Yeah.
And then lastly, before we wrap it up this time, I hope I wasn't too far away from the microphone. I bought Rumble Roses.
For the PlayStation 2?
No, for the 360.
All right, okay.
Yeah, it's a fighting game, sort of.
We still need to do a best worst game of that.
Have you got it?
I bought Rumble Roses for the PS for the PS2 and for the Xbox 360 purely so we could do a video of them.
Oh well,
absolutely ages ago.
This is stacking up the videos we need to do, but yeah, I bought it as the fighting game completist.
Bought those like a month or two after starting the podcast with an idea of us doing videos.
Well, we need to go and do more videos.
Yeah, we'll do it. It's all right.
So yeah, I did that to my 360 collection. That's it.
Cool gang.
That's it.
It's actually not it. If you look to your right, you have one game in a factory
seal. I almost forgot. I was going to say, it's been nice chatting to you, Matthew, this evening. Thank you for coming over to my humble abode and podcasting. Yes, Matt was so kind as to pick a game for me the other day while he was in Germany, in Flensburg.
As I mentioned on last week's podcast, I would.
Need for Speed Most Wanted You.
You
most
crack
wanted
that soldier boy.
Need for Speed. Now, this is a game I've been wanting for a while because I wanted a proper driving game for the Wii U, which, you know, the only thing I've got that comes close is Mario Kart. And this game is, first of all, Need for Speed, or in all but name, it's Burnout in all but name, basically. And in fact, this game is pretty much Burnout Paradise. So to have a game like that on my Wii U, I was very excited. But then this game was going for some silly prices online.
Yeah.
Woods of £30, it's become quite collectible. The German version, on the other hand, can be picked up for €22.
Yes, factory sealed.
Factory sealed, so yeah. Which I think people are buying these and selling them on at a profit on eBay.
Which would make sense, yeah, because their stack of them severely dwindled.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen a few up on eBay. Now, to be honest, they are cheaper than buying the PAL copy. But they actually
you
are...
You find that a lot, actually, with the British versions, with the English boxes. A lot of them have gone very, very pricey. And I think it's to do with the fact, if you go into most games retailers in the UK, and some people in the UK will probably say, nah, that's shit. But in my experience, anyways, not a lot of Wii U stuff. No. Not a lot of good Wii U stuff,
anyways.
No, that's
that you don't find the good stuff.
And a lot more available in Europe, because I don't think anyone really cared, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah. Well, I'm still looking for one or two.
Let me know
games.
What they are. I'll keep an eye
but
out.
They're new games. I want to get the new Sonic Mario at the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I have an interest in the Color Splash, Paper Mario Color
Splash. I want Mario Color Splash. Mm. I want Kirby. I also wouldn't mind giving the Sonic Mario at the Olympics game a go, even though I'm not really a fan, because it's the first time they've done a Mario Rugby.
I plan on getting it when I can find it for less than £30, which seems to be even secondhand how much it's going for.
I think you'll have trouble getting that cheaper. I think it's such a late release now that I think it's going to maintain its value. I'd like to give Need for Speed a go, though. Yep. If it is like Burnout, maybe I'll pick it up myself.
Yeah.
Okay, cool and gang. Right, that brings us to the end of the podcast, because our good friend Austin is about to arrive at yours, so I'm going to wrap it up as quickly as I can. If you would like to find us, you can find us on Facebook.
Hang on. No one's going to tell what you're saying there.
It doesn't matter. Everyone knows the gist. If you like the podcast, you can find us in a variety of places. On Twitter, at TMAcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TomandMattAttack. You can also listen to this podcast in a variety of places, such as on blastprocess.com, where I'm sure there's a lot of nice video content coming up there. So maybe some Parry's Pickups?
A brand new Parry's Pickup.
Oh la la.
Went live today.
You can also find us on tommattattack.com/podcast, as well as in iTunes and Stitcher. Actually, I've recently realised that you can actually submit podcasts to Spotify now, so I may just do that.
Oh, yes. Well, everyone's using Spotify.
Everyone's
nowadays.
Using Spotify. Ooh, I mean you're trending. Not cool if you're not. I mean, what are you using? Fucking Tidal? Where are you? I'll let you know when that's finally available anyway, so don't bother searching for it, because it's not there yet. Maybe next week. Who knows? But until then, have fun. Game on.
Game on.